It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour, and I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
Yes, it's true. In the flesh, tan, rested, ready to roll, he's back.
Yes, I am.
The prodigal son title is pretty appropriate during some times of the year. Actually, I was thinking today, you know, aside from one time when Comcast decided that we weren't going to be able to use any telephones, he was a long ways away, and it sounded like he was sitting right here.
Yeah, despite that technical glitch, which was really not was anything weird. To do with us, nope. It was a bit, it was pretty good.
Yeah, it seems the third world countries are emerging back into first world countries little by little.
Yeah, I was just using an app on my phone that allows our work phone to call in over the internet, and I found that was the clearest call quality. Huh. It worked really well, though.
Huh. Well, as long as you got an internet that has a phone system in it, I guess it works fine.
Yeah.
Anyway, also on the retro basis, I'd like to put out special thanks to Jennifer Aiken, the attorney, who came on and shared a lot of good knowledge, and she will be back because that was the day we had the phone problem and nobody could get in it to ask her a question. She's promised to return sometime pretty soon. And then last week, of course, was Stan, the annuity man. Stan's forgotten more about annuities than I ever knew, but he continually surprises me with things I did not know recently. And of course, like every other part of the financial services industry, times are changing.
A little bit more on that, too. Actually did Stan's podcast on Friday with him, and that will be coming out on the 9th. So I'll put that out on our social media.
And it's called Stan the Annuity Man podcast or the Annuity
Man? Something along those lines. I'll put a link out to it.
Okay. You put any version of Annuity Man in there, and you're going to go right to Stan.
Yeah, definitely.
He is the number one player in that business.
He is. He's got a YouTube channel with over 10,000 followers, and it'll be on that, and then also on all the major podcast platforms.
And you know, the funny thing is he spends an awful lot of time not selling annuities. Mm-hmm. If you don't need one and you're talking to him about getting one, he's going to tell you one thing. You don't need it.
Well, unless you do need it.
But he will also tell you, if you're crazy and you're one of those people that says, I hate annuities and I'd never buy one, if you need it, that's where it is. The other thing that surprised me to learn was that 85% of today's annuities are being sold in IRAs. Now, that contradicts the way we were all raised that said you don't pay for both. But it addresses the fundamental problem that people have, which is they need income for life in some form.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on the degree to which you have Social Security and whether or not you have any other pensions, military or private or whatever, you've got to talk about that. So that'll be addressed over the next few weeks, too, because it's a topic that's been on my mind a lot lately.
My favorite thing that Stan said, and we went over it again yesterday on the on his podcast, was, I won't let you put all of your money in annuities, and the government doesn't want that. It's not a good idea. Well, it's never a good idea to put all of your money into any one thing, no matter what it is.
That's the truth. But, and I've done a lot of writing and talking about diversification lately.
Yeah, but so many, you hear so many stories about annuity salesmen.
Well, the living trust seminars that you see everywhere, exactly. The gigantic newspaper ads and such, they want to know two things. How much money do you have overall? And which type of annuity can I sell you for that exact amount of money?
Exactly. So, yeah, I thought that was the best point, because annuities do have a great place in a good plan for Absolutely. The right person. Some people don't need them. Some people do.
But nothing, when you need nothing them. But an annuity, which pensions are annuities, Social Security is an annuity, so on. Nothing but that guarantees income for life. It solves a problem. And the one thing you'll hear from Stan, if you listen to him a lot, is annuities solve a problem. Period. They're not investments per se. They solve for a problem, and it's a transfer of risk. Now, that risk is your longevity. So anyway, thanks to all of those. You'll be hearing back from that sort of thing. Meanwhile, here we are back, and I so far have not been able to say thank you to everybody who's tuning in. The regulars, you know, we count on you, and I hope you count on us every week, because we intend to do this for a goodly long time. And if you're new to the show, whether you've discovered it by accident, or somebody told you about it, whatever, try to stick around for the hour. I promise you there will always be something in the course of an hour that you can pick up, some tip that you either didn't know and maybe it's helpful, or maybe you didn't know it and it's really helpful. But there are other people out there who don't know the same things that you don't know. So don't be afraid to call in 904-222-8255, and we put our callers right on the air virtually immediately. So, again, call if you have any questions, comments, or observations on the passing scene. We will have a trivia question after the break, as usual. And then if you were carrying over from Angela, you probably heard that, oh, my God, did we finish out that first half of the year in good shape?
Mm-hmm. Sure did. The first half of 2023 is now in the books, mm-hmm. which, man, it has flown
by. In other words, it's closer to next Christmas than it is to last Christmas.
Crazy.
Now. It is.
Hard to believe. It definitely finished better than anyone predicted. I don't think I heard a single prediction that would have been anywhere near what actually happened. The Dow gained 2%, the NASDAQ was up 2.2%, and the S&P up 2.3% for the week, and finished really strong headed into the long 4th of July weekend, and just all sorts of positive momentum.
On the top of my notes that I write for the market wrap part, it says, and you were so scared. And I mean that about every one of us. There was some point in the first 6 months where you were afraid.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I don't think there's anyone out there. I never thought we'd be in a position where you have a guaranteed basically 5% yield, no risk out there. And now people are looking at that and saying, dang it, why did I buy that?
So true.
And it's just not good enough, right? Because all the indexes were up way more than that. Mm-hmm. So anyway, people are having a little bit of buyer's remorse with that 5% yield. But you have to remember that A, you can't time the market. B, 5% yield on the fixed income portion of your allocation.
Which are there for one reason and one reason only.
Very strong yield. And so don't go getting buyer's remorse and then plow it all into equities, because the day you do that, they will drop.
Because also, according to the Fed, we're going to get a couple more increases.
Yeah, I'm not sure I buy that. But
I'm not betting money on it.
No, I mean, in fact, if I had to guess, I would guess that the administration is probably going to start putting some pressure on them to lower rates. But that's a topic for another day.
But you noticed that some good inflation news came out right after the Fed was talking like that.
Yeah,
it did. And it was almost like a little slap in the face to the Fed.
Good.
Says, don't be shooting your mouth off too much.
They never learned their lesson.
They never do.
They made all these predictions on the upside, missed them all by such a mile, they just never learned their lesson. It's really unbelievable.
Well, you know, when you're rich and powerful and you know everybody's going to listen to you, I guess it gets hard to keep your track shut.
Well, we've seen a lot of that over the last, 6 years now? So
I got a couple of pages of Bernanke-isms from his days there. All right, well, we'll get seriously into the market wrap as soon as we get back. Don't go anywhere. And this is the Vanway Financial Hour, getting ready to roll. Welcome back to the Vanway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanway.
And I'm Adam Vanway.
And yes, he is back. And I don't know, he always tells me that he does his best work while he's away. So the market was doing okay when he was gone in the first
part. Can't argue with that in June.
Yeah, but it started to fail a bit. And then when you came home, bang, you got to finish.
True.
So
that is true.
I suggest you stick around for a couple more days and see.
That's fair. Yeah, June turned out to be a really good month. The S&P actually outperformed the NASDAQ slightly, gaining 6.5% versus 6.3%. And I thought that was interesting to note, because the first quarter of the year, the story was about how the mega cap tech stocks were the only things holding up the market. But that's no longer the case, with the S&P doing well. In fact, the three sectors that are leading the market, that led the market in June, were industrials, materials, and consumer discretionary. So they were all up more than 11%, and technology was up just 6%. So that wasn't that. Even though people are still saying that's the narrative, that isn't really true anymore. Now, if you look at the performance year to date, they're still dominating the performance. But the other stocks are catching up, and we saw it with small caps this month. We saw it with those three sectors that I mentioned. So there are a lot of signs that the breadth of the market is increasing, and that is a good thing.
Let's hack in with the trivia question.
Go ahead.
I don't know that everybody knows this kind of thing, but it's kind of generally understood, and it's true, that in any four-year presidential term, the stock market doesn't like the second one very much, but it really likes the third year.
Mm-hmm.
How much does it like it? In other words, what's the average return for the third year of a presidential term through the period that started all the way back in 1928?
Okay. Good question. Yeah. There are a couple sectors with losses this year still: utilities, energy, healthcare, and financials, and they are all less than 6%. So the losses are pretty muted compared to the gains. We have technology leading the way higher for the year, up more than 40%. Pretty solid year to date on technology. Third quarter was a very strong quarter. The Dow was up just 3.4%. That's kind of been the case lately. The Dow's been really, it didn't drop much last year, and it hasn't gone up much this year. The S&P is up 8.3%, and the NASDAQ was up 12.8% for the quarter. Both the S&P and the NASDAQ have taken out their highs from last August to close at 52-week highs, and they're both solidly above their 50 and 200-day moving averages. The Dow is also above its moving averages, but it has yet to take out its previous high from November 30th of last year, although it looks like one more solid trading day could take that out. So it's just right on the precipice of
the nature of the beast is such that it moves a lot because of any one of the three or four big companies in there. So that's why we've long said it's fun to use the Dow as a measure of the market because the numbers are big, but it's not the way I would gauge what's going on. The S&P 500 is a far better gauge of the stock market.
Far better. It really is. In June, the Russell 2000, which is the small cap index, gained over 8%, which brought its total gain for 2023 to just over 8%. Clearly, small caps were left out of the rally in the first half of 2023, but that has now definitely changed. Now, they haven't caught up or even made a real move on some of the large cap stocks, but seeing that 8% move in the small cap index was a real positive for June.
Yep.
International stocks also rallying in 2023. Many have gained more than the S&P 500. Mexico has been the best market, up more than 26% year to date. Italy and Spain are up more than 21%, while Brazil, France, and Germany are all up more than 18%. Hong Kong and China have been the worst performing international markets, down 6.5% and 5% respectively.
Yeah, I wonder why.
I don't know. I can't figure it out.
I can't either. Wait, but you know, Adam bailed out, all of our clients bailed us out of China quite some time ago.
Yeah, it's been a while.
What an excellent idea that turned out to be with 2020 hindsight.
You just couldn't look at what they were doing and say, this is smart. I mean,
they had it rolling.
They really did.
They really did. I spent a lot of time reading about it and talking about it. They were being more capitalistic than we were.
No doubt about it. When they started going after Jack Ma and cutting down on all the tech companies, the private school companies,
yeah.
they basically shut them all down because they were teaching non-approved courses. By
exactly.
It just was like...
You can't teach anything that works.
Right. So what was the inevitable outcome of all that? And then they start making aggressive overtures towards Taiwan, and people are getting very nervous about their supply chains coming out of China, and they're moving them to Mexico, which is, I think, the reason Mexico's up 26% this year, and Taiwan and Vietnam and Korea and all other countries.
Yeah, we did have a preview of all that was to come if we were prescient enough to watch it, and it was a long time ago. They did not live up to their agreement in Hong Kong.
Nope.
And that should tell you everything you need to know about Taiwan.
Exactly. I do think I don't know that it'll happen anytime soon, but it is almost inevitable that they will try to make a move there. Whether it's military, politically, I don't know how it'll go down, but it definitely seems like it will happen. So we've got emerging markets up just 5.2% year to date, really dragged down by Hong Kong and China. And the all world index, except for the U.S., is up 10.4% year to date. Commodities are down year to date, driven largely by the fall in natural gas, which is still off 47% despite a recent rally. And oil, which is down 9.4%. Silver also has a loss on the year of 5.1%. Fixed income posted losses this week, but is up year to date. TLT, the long treasury ETF, is up 4.7%, while AGG, the aggregate bond index, is up 2.3%. So kind of muted gains on the fixed income side, but
that's more normal.
Yeah, after last year, that's we'll take any gains in fixed income.
Yeah, the old balanced portfolio is back in vogue now. While it wasn't working last year because nothing was going up, you could hear it all over the news. Oh, you know, that's passe.
Yeah,
never use 60-40 or 70-30 again, on and on. The one thing that they said that everybody should be listening to is they say never, you stop listening.
Yep, exactly. Speaking of that, saw who passed away this week.
Or
maybe it was last week. It was recently.
I think it was sometime this week.
Yeah, but the founder of the modern portfolio theory passed away. He was 95 years old.
Harry Markowitz. A man about whom I have been speaking on the radio for 22 years now.
He had a good run, though. 95 is nothing to...
Absolutely.
I would take that.
You know, published his first paper when I was two... Wow. He just died.
Yeah.
And I'm not young anymore.
That's right.
So you want to talk about a good run. He did all this before the computer power existed to prove
that's
it.
Right. That's right.
So he, fortunately, once he left the White House, he went back to Stanford. And he started with all of his students inputting data, market data, for everything for years and years and years. And it... As computers got bigger and better, all this data got to be inputted, and what the computerized models that were finally developed proved was that his theory was right all the way. So, what a guy.
Yeah, pretty impressive. And so much of what we do today is based on his theory and his ideas that he came up with. So it's sad to see him pass, but he really did make a huge contribution to the financial world.
Absolutely did. It'll be long remembered.
Had a couple of economic data points. Q1 GDP was revised up this week, up to 2% from 1.3. So they were only off by 54%.
And
so
I believe it because it came directly out of this administration.
Of course.
And it seems like they need some good news right now.
It'll be really interesting to see where Q2 comes in because everyone is predicting a recession. I always say that whenever everyone is predicting anything, that is the least likely outcome. So I don't know that it will happen. But now people are shifting, so maybe it will happen.
Look what happened to consumer sentiment. A year ago today, it was dreadful. They were in extreme oversold panic mode. And now we've gotten back to at least exuberance, if not what was... irrational exuberance, that was the word the Fed used to use. What a difference, and most of that came in the last 2 months.
Another data point that was released Friday showed personal income up 0.4% for the month. That was higher than expected. Personal income is now up 5.5% in the past year, which sounds great until you realize that inflation has outpaced that. So you've really, even though you've had really strong gains in your raises at work and things like that, it's not keeping up with the cost of everything. No, so,
and we haven't even started to talk about taxes yet in those numbers.
Yeah. So that, I mean, in a normal inflationary year, a gain of 5.5% would be off the charts good.
Yep. I agree. It is coming down. The rate of inflation is coming down.
It is.
Everybody likes to misuse these terms. Inflation coming down does not mean prices are coming down.
Right.
Except in arenas like commodities, which are volatile.
And the real problem is you don't actually want prices to come down. That's not good for the economy either. So
I want some prices to come down.
Well,
controllable.
Exactly.
Like
but
oil.
You don't want the bottom to drop out of the housing market. You don't want...
That doesn't seem to be a problem, does it?
It certainly is not.
Home builders are on fire out there.
Yeah, just be careful what you wish for with prices, because if prices do start dropping, that's even almost worse for the economy than inflation.
So our reign of confusion, I guess, is living on. It's so hard to tell what's going to happen in this economy, because one day everything looks recessionary and the next day you couldn't find anything that did. So who knows? We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Banway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have trivia questions still open, brought to you as usual by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. Call Ken at 904-636-7888. In general, over history, back to 1928, the third year of any presidential term has been the best for the market. What has been the average return for the third year of every presidential term since 1928? And it's just a number of percent.
Percentage return. Independent of party affiliation. This is across both.
That is absolutely, positively irrelevant when you're talking numbers.
That's right.
All right. Nothing else I can think of that's really going to affect the market much. You know, this week it's going to be a decided lack of interest going on because of the 4th.
Vacations, and this is really the summertime low volume type of time. Usually
the traffic from New York City out to the Hamptons is real high.
Exactly, barring any catastrophic news out of China or something like that. I do think we might see a bit of a sort of sideways market for the rest of the summer.
That's what I'm thinking. Not surprise me.
Typically, the third quarter is sort of when that happens. And then I think once the fourth quarter comes around, you're going to see some more action.
Strangely, though, July has been a very good month historically.
It has. It's tough to make a case for July being a really good month.
Is there anything normal out there right now?
Nope, there is not. So I don't know. I just have a tough time painting I don't think it's going to be a terrible month, but I don't see a catalyst for another 5 to 7%. Do you?
No, and I am less concerned for the market than I have been all year. That may not be good. We'll keep our eyes open.
Yeah, we'll see.
Those of you who
Let's see how that Q2 GDP number comes in.
Yeah, no kidding.
That'll give us an idea of what might happen in the second half of the year.
Now, our clients in general, we have been a little more cautious. We have higher cash levels than we normally would carry.
And by cash, you actually mean making 5%.
We couldn't do it before, and now we can. Yeah. Getting 5% returns, that's not like it sounds. It's not sitting on cash. That's investing in well-paying fixed income assets.
Which is just slightly below the rate that T-bills are paying. So it's really, holding cash right now is as lucrative as it's been in 15 years.
Yep. So we took everybody who didn't tell us otherwise, and we kept them nicely involved in the market, and they're all doing very well now. I've been looking through some account balances. Things are just pretty good right now.
Yeah, they are. But obviously staying invested for the whole time would yield the best results today.
And the worst when it was bad last year.
That's right. So it's always the same. I actually said this to Stan yesterday. He asked me what my one piece of wisdom was to leave people with. And I said, don't try and time the market. I think if the last 18 months have proven anything, you can't outperform your investments. So,
and that advice has to be given under the big cover of, if you don't have 5 years to invest that money, don't put it in the stock market.
Right, right.
So overlay everything with that.
Especially today, when you can make 5% on safe investments.
Well, I've got my 5 years of required minimum distributions parked at 5%.
Why wouldn't you?
Perfectly happy.
Yeah, of course.
And they'll always be there. So what the heck? There's a lot of changes in planning and investing over the last couple, 3 years. That's for sure. But what do you expect when we had a COVID economic shutdown?
Yeah.
Never happens. So, okay. some little things. Adam wants to take a good look, I think right after the break, at a guy who has a personal and very interesting perspective on one of the things we've been talking about, in particular lately, that being the Roth versus the traditional method of putting money away for retirement.
What but makes it really interesting is the guy is a self-proclaimed, I guess, but personal finance guru. So
yeah, there you go.
He kind of does what we do.
And now he's kind of doing a mea culpa.
Yep.
All right, let's hear some things that are going on out there. How many of you know what a 1040 ES is? You might just call it a quarterly tax payment that many of us are required to file because we don't have traditional W-2 jobs where the withholding on what we make is sufficient to cover our tax bill. So all you 1099 people, self-employed people, you're probably pretty familiar with the quarterly installments.
If you own any kind of halfway successful small business or successful small business, you're probably familiar with these.
And this has been a source of irritation for me for 40 or 50 years because I've always worked for myself. And most years, I wind up paying estimated quarterly installments. But by quarterly, what do we mean?
Not exactly quarterly.
Not exactly quarterly. April 15th, June 15th, September 15th, and January 15th.
So,
that's quarterly.
So random.
So in that one period where you've got June 15th and September 15th, there's a disruption in most people's cash flow. Well, all of a sudden, the American Institute of CPAs has sponsored legislation called H.R. 3708, the Tax Deadline Simplification Act. And what it says is all quarterly payments will be due 15 days after the end of the quarter. Now, is there anything you can think of conceptually that is simpler than that and more fair than that? Nothing I can think of. Quarter ends, 15 days later, you got to throw money in there.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Duh.
But then there's the ones that are due before the...
Yeah, April and then June, that's all in one quarter.
Yeah.
And then September, when October comes with the fourth quarter, you don't know anything out of there until January. I don't know the rationale for having set it up that way. But I do know this. This is a slam dunk. So thank you to the Institute of CPAs for proposing something so rational.
That would be great, yeah.
I think that if consumers and self-employed people and that sort of thing actually get hold of this concept, there'll be a big old push for it. So we hope. Now, here's on the other side of things. I did not know until this week something that just caught my eye for a very interesting reason. As part of the what we call the Trump tax cuts, the TCJA, Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017, there was a provision that if you owned 10% or more of a foreign company, you had to pay tax on the income, but they didn't mean just the income. You didn't have to have it distributed to you. So if the company made a profit and you own 10% of the company, 10% of that profit was taxed to you one time.
Is this on C-Corps or?
Foreign corporations, I'm not sure. I did not see any further description of them except they were foreign. So there was a couple in Washington State, Charles Moore and his wife. They owned over 10% of a foreign company, and because of that, they got a tax bill for $14,729 in tax, and they didn't receive a penny. So if you all are regular listeners and have heard me say this before, maybe read it on the blog, I call this problem taxation without monetization. Which means you don't got the money, but you got to cough it up.
Yeah.
So they have filed a 2019 lawsuit. They filed against the government, and now the government has to decide again the big question. Do you have to receive the income to pay tax? It's always been resolved the right way so far, but this one, first off, I'm as disappointed as I could possibly be to find out that it was Trump's tax law that brought this thing in, and it never should have. But now they have to. We have to rely. And of course, the Ninth Circuit said it was fine.
Of course.
Yeah. One thing. Back to Trump for a moment. Trump actually got enough people on the Ninth Circuit that it's about half and half now. So depending on, there's a bunch of people on that circuit. If you get drawn out of the right pool, you'll get a conservative Ninth Circuit. And if you get the wrong one, you'll get a liberal Ninth Circuit. It's better than 100% predictable on the mm-hmm. liberal side, but these people didn't win on that one. So it is, I gather it is going to be taken all the way to the Supreme Court. And based on what's happened the last couple of weeks on the Supreme Court, I am pretty sure they'll throw this out and the couple will get their
tax. Yeah, I would guess so. It doesn't make any sense to get taxed on earnings you didn't receive. I mean,
that's a slippery slope.
Yeah, what is that? Doesn't
today's liberals?
There can't be any basis for that.
No, today's liberals are trying to take that a step further. They just pay taxes on your unrealized gains in your assets,
right?
House or stocks,
or it kind of the other one. It kind of reminds me of is the one that they brought up about that if you own a house, what you would have gained if you rented it out.
Rent.
Yeah.
That was a Bill Clinton thing.
Ridiculous.
If you go to Zillow and look at your house on Zillow, it'll give you the owner's equivalent rent.
Yeah.
And but if you had to pay taxes on that, you'd be mighty disappointed.
Oh, yeah.
And that I could talk about this forever, but you already are paying for that.
Yeah, that's called property tax.
And if you have a mortgage, you're paying that. It's not like they're going to reduce that owner equivalent rent by the amount of mortgage you pay. They're not. That has nothing to do with it. I don't think it'll ever pass, but they never stop talking about it. So just I will keep you posted on the progress of this one. Because it is my personal vendetta against taxation without monetization. And this could be some way to at least get it back in the records that we don't do that as a country. All right, we got to take one more break. We'll be right back. Adam's got some interesting Roth things. And don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And trivia question is still out there. Call us at 904-222-8255. What is the average percentage gain for the third year of a presidential administration all the way back to 1928? And it's a good one. I was just telling Adam, there's a bunch of things. 46 of our states use July 1 as their fiscal year. So a lot of things go into effect on July 1 in a lot of states, including Florida. We are now the 26th constitutional carry state, which I think is a wonderful thing. The governor has done a good job with a lot of things. But most of the states are using this opportunity to increase things like gas taxes. And even in Montana, they're putting an electric tax. So people charging their cars with their electricity who aren't buying enough gas at the pump anymore are still going to get hit.
You knew that was coming.
Of course you do.
Well, I mean, and I can almost justify that one because that is where a lot of the money comes from to repair roads. So if you're driving on the roads, you need to pay to repair the roads.
And the thing that bothers me is there's so many proposals out there in so many places right
so
now.
So few tax cuts.
To do a mileage.
That one I don't like, yeah.
Mileage tax.
Not a fan of that one.
Good morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning. Good morning to the great Van Wee.
Oh, thank you so much. What's happening?
Well, it's hot down here in Florida. That's the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
Summer in the city.
Yes. It's also hot when you get HOA letters. I think they use a microscope to find little weeds between rock cracks.
I think you're right. Yeah, I've seen really, enough of them.
Really? Anyhow, good week for the market.
So was.
I don't understand. I've been waiting for a correction, somewhat of a correction, for some months now. But I guess the stock market is the only place to be. So.
Well, I'll tell you one thing for absolute certainty. There's a correction on the way. And I will tell you exactly when, about a month after it's over.
Okay, I hear you. I hear you. Anyhow, I'm going to take a shot at the trivia question, if
Shoot.
I may. I'm going to go with 13.5%.
We got the smartest listeners anywhere around, don't we?
Well, I have to give partial credit to Ed Yardini.
Well, whatever it takes, right?
Whatever it takes.
You took the initiative. It is indeed 13.5% average. This is a long average, too.
It is.
1928
it is.
To 2022, anyway, or 2020.
If you shorten the interval a bit, it even reached as high as, 28% for certain periods.
Wow. But, oh, nice.
Why is that? Why do we, what's the best reason for the third year?
Well, there's a lot of people who speculate that it has to do with things like people flooding money into their Roth IRAs, regular IRAs, 401ks, and so on, because of the April cutoff for last year. I personally, I can't imagine that is a big deal, because that would happen every year. So maybe it's just the relief. Let's go political for just a second. I'll speculate on this. The first 2 years.
I'm wondering if it has something to do with the third year brings them closer, the party or the president, to trying again for another 4 years. So
I'm thinking along the same line, but a little bit differently. How about we've had now a midterm election, which supposedly is a referendum on the guy who's just spent two years running.
Almost always.
Yeah.
You're probably seeing...
I bet that's it.
You're probably seeing the first 2 years, a lot of things can get through, get passed, mm-hmm. and the second 2 years, nothing can happen. What is the market like better? When nothing happens in D.C.
Divided government.
Yeah.
I'll bet that's more of it than anything. Because the people have spoken, and the president at the moment will have to listen. So maybe, not the political analyst, but the numbers speak for themselves.
Yeah, I'll just briefly say, here's one other number that speaks for itself. I heard today on the radio, on your station, from someone that they can't find $200 billion of COVID relief money, that it just went out to fraudulent purposes. And they were saying that the government spends money worse than a drunken sailor, and I have to agree with that.
No doubt
yes,
about it.
It's even worse than that. That's just the COVID part. I have the number here. I can't put my finger on it right now. But the amount of the budget that's wasted annually should cause everybody in the whole country who pays anything in taxes to stand up and just object. It's ridiculous.
I couldn't agree more. Anyhow, gentlemen, thanks for your generosity. You have a great show and have the greatest holiday weekend.
All right, I'll put you on hold, and we can get your stuff. I think we've got it, but I never like to take a chance of not getting it. So thanks for the call.
Have a great weekend, gentlemen. Have a great holiday.
Yeah, you too. Happy 4th. 13.5%?
Yeah.
Where are we year-to-date?
On the S&P.
Year-to-date, S&P 59. So
yeah.
Bail out now?
Uh-oh.
No. Yeah. No, actually, the stats are pretty good.
That the rest of the year should be pretty good. When you have a strong start like this, the rest of the year is typically pretty good.
Yep. And when you look at how far we fell, it's not that surprising, I guess.
No, not really.
All right. Roth versus regular.
Yeah, so there is a personal finance guru named Derek Sal, and he put out it was summed up in an article. I think he might have actually spoken it the first time on the show, but it was put out in an article in the Daily Mail that he believes that he made a huge mistake while saving for retirement. He is, I believe, 38 years old, and he has been putting all of his money into a Roth 401k, and as opposed to a traditional 401k. Now, if you don't know the difference, basically, with a traditional 401k, you put your money in and you get a tax deduction in that amount in the year that you put the money in. And with a Roth, you actually pay taxes on that amount, and then you put your after-tax dollars into the account. It grows tax-free forever, so when you take it out, you don't pay any taxes on the withdrawal. Whereas with the traditional, when you take it out, you pay taxes. Your tax rate at the time is what is applied to when you remove the money. So what he's saying is that he made a $400,000 mistake by putting this money into a Roth 401k versus a traditional 401k. And his logic behind that is that right now his marginal tax rate is 22%, and in retirement the average tax rate is 5.7%. So he is taking a look at that and just applying a growth rate and determining where how much he'll take out in RMDs in the future and saying, I really, really messed up. And it's unusual to hear a personal finance guy tell everyone he really messed up. So I thought it was an interesting topic of discussion.
I think it's also unusual to find a personal finance guy who would put it all in a Roth.
Well,
depends what your income level is. Adam and I get this question a lot, as you can probably imagine. People come in and we talk about all the aspects of it, and we try to manage income when we're doing that because we want you to take advantage. If you're in a 12% bracket and you have some room left in it, yeah, pay that to convert some money to a Roth.
Yeah, at the 12% rate, it's almost a no-brainer to do the conversion. Yeah. But when you get in the 22% bracket, what I've found when I've done this analysis is that if you have long enough to let the Roth grow, yeah, it makes sense. But it's not the slam dunk that you might think it is, because tax-free money sounds great. There's no doubt about that. But you have to remember, you've already, to get a $20,000 Roth deposit, you probably had to, well, you had to make, you had to pay that 22%. So you had to make way more than that to even get that $20,000 deposit. So it's, it really surprises me, actually, every time I do this activity, how much less of a slam dunk it is than I thought it would be.
The draw, I'll get into this with Stan a little bit last week, the draw of tax-free income for life sort of blinds people to the cost of those things.
For sure.
We were talking last week about the fully funded life insurance people and that sort of thing, and their spiel has a problem in that it uses illustrations of what might happen, and you never, ever can rely on a presentation of what might happen in a either in a life insurance contract or an annuity contract. You have to look, as Stan himself would say, at what will it do, not what might it do. What will it do? Contractual obligations. I feel like the Roth IRA is oversold by too many people because of that tax-free income down the line. The chances are, if you're setting yourself up that way to have an extremely low taxable income in retirement, you're going to get the numbers that the guy that you were talking about gets, where you're going to be in an extremely low marginal tax bracket and an effective rate that's very, very low. And you'd have been far better off to let the greater amount of money go ahead longer and still hopefully confine yourself to the 12% bracket or so on.
It's funny.
You can't manage your later income unless you manage how you put it away.
It's funny because one of the arguments, they interview another financial guy, and one of the arguments against what this guy has done or has said is that he hasn't taken into account future tax rates. So this guy's saying, well, tax rates are going to go up, but he doesn't know that at all. That's
the
pure
argument.
Speculation.
I made that argument for 10 years on the radio. Every single tax proposal was coming through with lower rates, and now many of the states are going to do the same thing and lower their rates because they have so much cash, and it's they want to get rid of your deductions. They don't want your bracket going crazy. So you got to be very careful. That's one of the things we do. We'll do more of it next week. Thanks for listening. Glad Adam's back. This is the Ben Wee Financial Hour.